The political season is upon us again, hot and heavy. We get to assess the candidates and choose who we like and who we don't. Here in Manassas and Prince William, we elect local candidates and local and state officials in November. The primary and the caucus meetings are August 23rd, so mark your calendars. However, most discussions I hear are about President Obama and the Republicans, whoever they'll nominate to run against him next year. Personally, I'm inclined to compare Obama to my ideal president, and in my eyes, he falls far short of the ideal. I happen to care about environmental issues. I see little evidence that he cares. Then I look at the alternatives to Obama, and I get to judge, would this person be better or worse than the incumbent? For many of us, that's an easy decision. Some of us in this room are voting for the Republican, no matter who it is. Others will vote for Obama no matter what, and they know it now. As a Unitarian Universalist, I respect everyone's responsible search for truth and meaning. Whatever answer is right for you in economics and politics, hey, that's your decision. You choose your path, I'll choose mine. Let's find some issues where we agree and work on something together. What's frustrating to me is how rarely we articulate the rationale behind our opinions. In many cases, the discussions about the budget, wars in the Middle East, global warming, nuclear power, whatever, they've been reduced to three-word bumper sticker slogans. I listened to Jon Stewart on Comedy Central. He provokes more thinking through humor than the recitations of the talking points by guests and commentators on Sunday morning talk shows and cable TV. Simple answers to complex challenges do exist, but those answers are rarely valid. In World War I, the simple answer was declare war based on existing treaty obligations. Numerous governments took that easy path, refusing to face the reality that the guns of August were optional, not mandatory. World War I is probably the best example of the old axiom that war is the failure of diplomacy. About 10 million soldiers, including 116,000 Americans, died in that war to end all wars. If I want to be lazy, I can turn off my critical thinking skills. If someone offers an alternative that challenges my conventional wisdom, even an emissary from God responding to a prayer, I can simply declare the other person as a lunatic and ignore the substance of their message. How many of us have already done that with Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin, or Dennis Kucinich and Jesse Jackson Jr.? After all, those executive training classes that we took told us the way to get ahead was to soar with the eagles and not to flock with the turkeys. We need to make decisions quickly and quit wasting time dealing with the losers. If we followed that advice, I suspect that our coffee hour after Sunday services would be pretty empty. If there was a Losers Anonymous meeting here at Brew, we could all qualify as members. We failed at marriages. We screwed up our careers or our business. We've promised to exercise more and eat less, but we're still overweight. In my case, I'm under tall. When buying houses or investing in the stock market, we've bought high, we've sold low. We ain't perfect in our diction. Each of us has suffered defeats in our lives. We can choose to focus on when we were a loser, blaming our ex-partners, our ex-parents, our ex-bosses for our current less-than-perfect situation, or we can keep pushing forward. We might always have the experience of having been a loser, but we can still lead a useful life, like Cornwallis after Yorktown or Lee after Appomattox. But how do we get past the stage of complaining and blaming and start thinking about solutions? How do we re-stimulate a creative problem-solving approach when modern society surrounds us with sorry excuses of politicians making sorry excuses? History offers us a great opportunity to break out of our tendency to be hypercritical of our current leaders and wannabe leaders. We need a different angle. It's going to be hard for some of us to accept that the proposals of the Tea Party include some legitimate solutions to real-world problems, or that the bailout of the Wall Street investment firms actually helped ameliorate the financial crisis. One option is to go to science fiction. We can discuss today's problems in a make-believe world. That's what Rod Serling did when he created the Twilight Zone TV series. It allowed him to discuss racism in the context of a future society, communicating a clear message without triggering a "I don't want to hear another word about segregation" response in the 1960s. I suggest we talk about the past. It's safer. If you look backwards, you can debate current issues without debating current personalities. It's been 150 years, but we still argue about the causes of the Civil War. It's been even longer since Cornwallis surrendered, and war colleges still study how a different command structure in the British Army could have changed events at Yorktown. We argue about the morality of Thomas Jefferson and whether he fathered children with Sally Hemings. We debate if we should name schools after George Washington, a slave owner. Until recently, only economists debated about how Herbert Hoover should have dealt with a stock market crash in 1929, but now the role of the government in the financial sector is a hot, hot topic. All these history conversations are proxy debates about what should we do today about racism and sexism. What's the appropriate role of government? Should shareholders and corporations require management by some moral principles as well as the bottom line? Go down to the Washington Monument if you get to the mall on July 4th, and you will see a blank white canvas. We have the option to project onto that canvas whatever we want to think about the indispensable man who relied upon slave labor. And through discussion of history, we can discover and expose our current ideas and perspectives. We can match them against the facts. We might even adjust our thinking. We can change our mind. We might decide that Robert E. Lee may have been a traitor to the federal government, but he's a legitimate hero if you think state governments were authorized to secede. Lee said, "Do your duty in all things. You cannot do more. You should never wish to do less." As Unitarian Universalists, we encourage independent thinking to determine our sense of duty. We don't have a religious leader in Boston who issues guidance we must follow, and we have polylog after services because we don't assume the speaker giving the sermon is always right either. The downside, doing our duty as we see it, might cause us to become unpopular. Witness how Herbert Hoover's reputation declined because he stuck to his beliefs on the limited role of government after the 1929 stock market crash. We forget that Hoover was a brilliant engineer who helped establish all sorts of industrial standards that facilitated mass production, or that he led a wildly successful humanitarian campaign to help the hungry and the homeless in Europe after World War I, or that President Truman relied upon Hoover's recommendations when reorganizing the federal government after World War II. Hoover the loser? Maybe, maybe not. In 1912, Theodore Roosevelt said, "It is not the critic who counts. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes up short again and again, who, if he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who knew neither victory nor defeat." We should honor Herbert Hoover, Robert E. Lee, and Lord Cornwallis, even if we think they are losers. They did not sit on the sidelines blogging about the failings of others. Their reputations are marred today because they came up short, but they did their duty. As Robert E. Lee said, "We cannot do more, but we should never wish to do less."